This is Book Public from Texas Public Radio. I'm Yvette Benavides. In this episode, I speak to Jill Bielowski about her book, The End is the Beginning, A Personal History of My Mother. In March of 2020, just about 1 month into the global COVID-19 pandemic, Jill Bielowski's mother, Iris, passed away at the age of 86 after living for 10 years with Alzheimer's disease. Jill Bielowski documents the excruciatingly painful time in our world and in her family's life as restrictions kept her from being able to fly from New York to Cleveland. She had to watch her mother's funeral service online. The separation mirrored the time she spent away from her mother in her final days. Bielowski describes this painful chapter in her life in her book, The End is the Beginning, A Personal History of My Mother. In subsequent chapters, she shares stories about her mother's life at age 85, age 83, 78, and so on. And this reverse chronology continues. We see Iris at 43 and younger. When Iris was 25, her husband died at the very young age of 30. Iris was left with three daughters under the age of three to raise alone. She married again and had another child, a daughter. We learn about what happened to this beloved one. It's another painful chapter in the life of Iris and her other daughters. And we continue through the chapters about the courtship between Milt and Iris, about Iris's childhood, and we learn that Iris's own mother had died when Iris was only 9 years old. There is something about this reverse chronology, this unusual structure of this book, that helps us to see Iris so closely and see her in so many stages of her life. It does something with the ways we can perceive her and get to know her. We learn about Iris's strength and perseverance, all she endured to make a life for her daughters and herself, in spite of so much strife, so many sorrows. Jill Bielowski, an author of 5 acclaimed books of poetry, has received many honors for her work. It should not be difficult to imagine that, as she says in the interview you'll hear next, literature has always provided a kind of a touchstone for the author in answering life's challenging questions and navigating her life and her work. It certainly offers more access into our understanding about how she allows us to enter these profound and poignant stories about her mother's life, a mother who, despite so many difficulties, led a life worth remembering always. Hear now my conversation with Jill Bielowski about her memoir, The End is the Beginning, A Personal History of My Mother. Well, first of all, tell us about this book. When people ask you, what is The End is the Beginning about, what do you say?
Well, I say that The End is the Beginning is really a daughter's tribute to her mother, and it is the story that I wanted to write to document my mother's life, because I felt that her life in some ways is universal to someone who grew up in the era in which she grew up. She was born in 1933, and she was raised to be a mother and a wife. And she got married when she was 21 years old and quickly had three daughters, all under the age of three, when her husband, my father, died unexpectedly of a heart attack. And so in that moment, her entire future, what she thought her future would be, changed. And really, it's a story about my desire to bring her alive again and tell a story of an ordinary woman who is extraordinary.
Oh my gosh, that really says it. And you know, what's so interesting to me is this reverse chronology that you use. It's unusual. The book structure takes us from your mother's final days in the first pages backwards to her childhood. And at first, as I was reading, I thought, how is this going to work? And of course, it does. And it has this amazing effect of, I don't know quite how to say this, of really helping us understand your mother. It's sort of like as we come to the conclusion of one chapter and something has happened to her, we turn the page and there she is again. And we go to the next chapter and there she is again in a different phase of life. It's really something so remarkable. How did you hit on this idea of using this reverse chronology?
Well, first of all, thank you, Yvette. I'm so glad that it works for you. What happened was that my mother passed away during the first month of COVID, which was in March of 2020. And if you recall, we were all under restrictions and quarantines. And my mother was living in Cleveland in a care home. And I was in New York when I learned that she was having her last days and in hospice. And because of the restrictions, I couldn't go to see her, nor once she passed away, could I go to the funeral, which had to be graveside and only 10 people allowed. And so I viewed my mother's funeral via FaceTime with my sister who lived in Cleveland. And this experience made it very difficult for me to process my mother's death. And because I'm a writer, I wrote about this surreal experience of witnessing her funeral via FaceTime for the New York Times. And once I had written that piece, it really somehow I made this commitment that I was going to tell her story. And I decided that I would try to do it from reverse chronology, because I had this idea that if I were able to trace the pivotal moments of her life, some of the decades of her life, when she was suffering from Alzheimer's the last 10 years, the reader would slowly see her coming alive again through these periods. And then by the end of the book, I love this idea that she would be born. So it was challenging, but I'm glad that I undertook it. And then coincidentally, when I was working on the book, I was at a writer's retreat at the T.S. Eliot House, and I was reading T.S. Eliot's poem, The Four Quartets. And there were these lines that I use as the epigraph of my book, and got the title, The End is the Beginning, comes from that poem where Eliot is writing about the journey that always at the end of our days are the beginning of our days. And so that was really fortuitous that I came across that poem at that particular moment. So it seemed like it was fated to be.
It does. Wow. And obviously, you're an editor and your depth of knowledge of literature is tremendous. You mentioned T.S. Eliot's Four Quartets and the epigraph. The literary allusions here, well, they're impressive. We can think back to Shakespeare and Murakami, Jane Kenyon, and mythology too, of course. And your book shows us really the very profound ways that books and literature and the reading life are things we turn to for answers, or maybe even for questions to ask or for resonance to find. Do you find this to be the case? And was it helpful to you? Has it been helpful to you to turn to the works of others as you have processed the death of your mother and also written about your mother?
Yes, it really has. I mean, literature has been my touchstone since I was really a young girl. I was one of those nerdy young girls who was always had a book in her hand. And I was very lucky at a young age, too, to discover poetry. And I wrote a previous book called Poetry Will Save Your Life, where I use particular poems that, not my own poems, but poems by classic poets that reverberate with certain moments in my own life. And poetry and literature has always been a way in which, for me, I can understand some of the complexities of human nature. And, you know, particularly, I think poetry and prose can speak to the way in which loss affects us as human beings and how we process certain emotions, and also just the pleasure of storytelling and language. So, yes, as you can, well, you can see from my bookshelf, although this is an audio, I have so many books that have meant so much to me.
Oh, I love the way I can see your books. It's being able to read your words and your storytelling and then have these books and stories and poems that meant so much to you that were sort of your companions on this journey.
Mm-hmm.
And then there were some of the things I was not as familiar with, some of these articles about mental health or dementia or depression. Those work, too, to fill in gaps in my own knowledge, information about aging or depression, and guide me sort of along sitting with you on this journey as you were also sort of reaching out for sources and looking for answers. And this is really beyond, you know, Googling symptoms at midnight, you know, on our iPad or something. This is some very, very deeply researched stuff. What was this part of your research like? I mean, I love how it works hand in hand. It's the literature that means so much and that we find answers in, along with, you know, some of the more clinical things and some of the more scientific and medical things. Those things that you research too are in the book and also, you know, very helpful to us, the readers.
I'm glad to hear that. You know, I think some of the research in terms of what my mother suffered from throughout her life, as I mentioned earlier, she was diagnosed with Alzheimer's 10 years before she passed away. And I felt a very strong desire to want to understand what was happening to her, because for anybody who has been in my shoes, once this diagnosis happens, you really don't know what's coming next. And, you know, slowly and gradually, I did watch my mother lose many of her cognitive abilities. And it was really important for me to be able to find the research that confirmed what I always felt, that my mother was in those years when she wasn't able to formulate long sentences, or, you know, she wasn't able to communicate in the same way. I still felt that her essence and her personality was all there. And so I did want to do research to confirm that. And also I hope that my book in those early chapters where I write about her illness could be helpful to other readers to really consider the dignity, that we need to preserve the dignity of those who are suffering from dementia or Alzheimer's, and speak to them and communicate. And yes, my mother did suffer from depression during periods of her life that I witnessed as a young girl. And at that time, I really didn't understand depression. I was frustrated with my mother that sometimes she couldn't function well. And because at that time, depression really wasn't talked about. It wasn't until books like, I think, William Styron's book, Darkness Visible, had a real impact on me. And so I thought it was important for the reader, when I was writing about these episodes that my mother suffered from, that I could give more clarity to the reader. And something very unusual happened to me as I was writing this book, was that I really always had compassion for my mother and empathy for many of her struggles. But it wasn't until I really told this story that I realized how heroic she was, raising four daughters on her own and struggling, as I said, as a single mother in a period in which she sort of was, what is the word I'm trying to think about? You know, in the 80s, when the women's movement took hold, it was too late for my mother in some ways. And so I felt that it was important for me to tell her story, because I know that so many women out there have gone through this experience, and their daughters have watched as well and have learned from their mother's journeys.
I love this idea, and I love the details where you are considering your mom's dignity. There's that scene very early on in the book where you notice that her nail polish is sort of caked on layer upon layer. and you try to correct that and give her a nice manicure. Those kinds of details are so, they might seem very small, but they're not. They really take on tremendous significance. And I hear what you're saying. I mean, part of your mother's story has to do with the time that she was in. It has to do with her relationships with men. I mean, even in the nursing home, she sort of partnered off with a gentleman who himself was living with Alzheimer's disease. But your mother came up in a time when, as you say, young women were expected to dress and act in certain ways and to get married. And then when your father died, I mean, she was still quite young. So it is the same kind of period of being a single woman was extended for her. It's sort of like she became a single woman again. It's just very interesting to me. And you describe some of your mom's dates and suitors. And I imagine that when you're a little girl watching this happen, it really leaves an imprint maybe on you and your sisters.
Yes, it certainly did leave an imprint on us. I think that when my mother began to date again, her family, I think, the idea was that, yes, she was 25. She had three young girls. How was she going to cope? How was she going to go on? So what her family was telling her was that she should find a new husband and a father for us. So she did do quite a bit of dating when me and my sisters were young. And, in my book, I have a chapter on that period, and that was a fun chapter to write as I was recalling how, my mother used to take hours getting ready, and it felt to us almost like it was her job that she was doing. And so we were all sort of fascinated by it and also a little apprehensive when we saw the dates come into our house. You probably recall, Yvette, that when she was in junior high and high school, my mother was very popular and she had so many dates. And I was lucky that I have her scrapbook where she meticulously kept track of her dating life and her social life of being members of sororities and clubs. And so I think that this idea of dating or finding the right man was something that was certainly defined her throughout her life.
Well, when your mom was very young, her own mother passed away. Do you think that after writing this book and sort of putting yourself back in that time with her as a young girl and writing the story, what do you think was the central influence on Iris, this huge loss of her mother when she was just a very little girl?
Yes, when she was 9 years old, she was the only child, and then her mother got pregnant. And during her pregnancy, she contracted scarlet fever, which was going viral at that time, and there were no antibiotics. And when she gave birth, she died, and her baby, my mother's brother, survived. And I know that early loss had a tremendous effect on my mother. I always sort of knew that in a way, but I didn't realize until I was writing the book how deep that went. And, that kind of loss, she really relied on her father, and luckily his sisters, my mother's aunts, came in to help out with the new baby and taking care of my mother. But she was very much coddled by them all, and I think that there was this expectation that she would always be taken care of. And sadly, her life, did not really go that way. In some ways, my sisters and I took care of her when we could. So I do think it was really indelible, the loss of her mother. And I wanted my book to also show how these losses affect us as we come of age.
Yes, absolutely. I mean, I feel like one of the least tolerable things for me emotionally is to consider the ways that my mother has ever suffered, especially as a little child.
Mm-hmm.
So this idea of your research on your knowing these stories about your mom and the things that she went through and considering this, and then that your mom went through these things. And, you know, it's such an interesting kind of the way it transmits, the way it relays to us from mother to child and on. We read about the courtship of Milt and Iris in this book. I love their love. Can you tell us a little bit about your father and your mother and how they came together? Because you write, "When will the floor drop? In the Greenbaum home where Iris grew up, tragedy is always around the corner. The future is hopeful." Can you tell us about your parents?
Yes, thank you, Yvette. I mean, I loved writing that chapter where I was imagining my mother's courtship and her wedding with my father, because they were clearly very deeply in love. And I have, you know, even in the photos that I have of my parents together, you can see it. And I do have a selection of photos in the book. But yes, my mother just, she used to always say to me and my sisters, "I can't believe your father chose me." And she just really thought he was just a wonderful person. He graduated from Miami University in Ohio, and he was a great athlete throughout his high school years, and he played football for Miami University, and he had very many close friends that he grew up with, that he played sports with, and everybody told me that he was a mensch. And when I would sometimes come across people who knew my father, they would find out that I was his daughter, their eyes would tear up because they loved him and thought that he was such a special person. And I think that they just had this marriage that they were very much in love, and they really were excited about creating a family. They had just built a new house for the young girls. And it was a real tragedy when he died suddenly of a heart attack. Nobody could believe it. And my mother, to the end of her life, you know, she wore her engagement ring, and she used to turn it around on her finger and tell us stories about my father. And at the end of her life, she really felt that they would be reunited.
Oh, that's so beautiful.
Yes. So something else that the book, I think, really hit home for me is how even if you have that one love, even if it's short-lived, it can last a lifetime in terms of memories and sustenance that I know my mother felt.
Your father died on a very cold day in March of 1959. And it almost seems in reading about Iris that this deep sorrow, this really like unimaginable thing, was kind of a foregone conclusion because of this idea of tragedy always being around the corner and how she knew such loss in her childhood. But you say Iris was not bitter. She was heartbroken, but not bitter. And I found that such an interesting distinction. I felt even just this one sentence about her help me understand her a little bit more. And there are many moments like that in this book. There are these breathtaking moments as you read this book when Iris is experiencing a terrible loss, like the death of your father, and you turn the page and she's yet younger and yet living her life, but somehow there's still this brand of this kind of heart-squeezing feeling of seeing a younger and still expectant Iris moving around in the world. That's what this reverse chronology does. I wasn't quite articulating it quite this way before, but maybe that's what I mean. It's sort of like we know of her sadness and her strife, but we are sort of marching toward a younger and younger Iris who was not bitter, who was full of hope. Mm-hmm. And we see her in a kind of a wholeness by the time we finish this book. It's just something so amazing to me.
Well, thank you, Yvette. That means so much to me. I suppose that the bond between a mother and a daughter, especially a daughter like me who didn't know my father, was just such a huge and deep aspect of my life. And I felt like I knew my mother very well, but even writing about her, I think that there were things that I unconsciously knew, and that because I'm a writer, I was able to bring that forward in the writing. And it wasn't an easy book to write because it was emotional for me. But I'm glad that I persisted.
I am too. Jill Bialoski, thank you so much for talking to me today.
Thank you for having me and for your wonderful reading of my book. I really appreciate it.
Jill Bialoski is the author of The End is the Beginning, A Personal History of My Mother. This has been Book Public from Texas Public Radio. Write to us at bookpublic@tpr.org. Jacob Rosati composed our theme music. Dan Katz is Texas Public Radio's news director. I'm Yvette Benavides.